Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
We're the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in New York City and the surrounding area. And this show aims to bring the culture to horticulture. Alice, I think you have a little announcement about the Old Stone House event coming up.
Yes, the Old Stone House is a...
Speaking of culture.
Exactly, is a Dutch farmhouse that is located in Brooklyn, and there's a book event coming out. A woman named Andrea Wolf, the Old Stone House is actually, it's a Dutch farmhouse, but it was the site of a very bloody revolutionary battle, the Battle of Brooklyn. And it's an amazing institution. And Andrea Wolf is a garden writer from England, and she wrote a book called The Founding Gardeners.
And she was on our show.
She was on our show talking about that book, and she is actually coming to Brooklyn to speak about that book on the 29th of October, and tickets are only $25.
Which is a really good price. We want you guys who are listening and who are in the area to try to come.
$25, the Old Stone House.
What's the website, OSH?
It's theoldstonehouse.org.
Okay, well, we have
tickets.
Good. Yeah. I hope that you can join. She's a great writer and an excellent speaker. I know we're going to be attending that.
Yeah, you know, George Washington is a gardener. Who doesn't want to talk about that?
Well, we have another Englishman with us today. International garden designer and writer Noel Kingsbury is our special guest. Besides his work as a garden and planting designer, writer, lecturer, and researcher, Noel is also a visiting scholar, Department of Landscape, University of Sheffield. Now, when every guest, we ask them to send us their CV or their bio, and Noel's CV was so extensive and broad.
And I love, Carmen, that you had it printed out in the landscape format.
I did, Noel. Had to be different. I can't go, there's not enough time to go over all of the things that he's done, so I'm just going to hit the highlights here. He has written dozens of books, including several with renowned plant designer Pete Udolph, who was also on our show. Last year, I think it was, Alice.
And Noel's been on our show before.
Yes, this is this show is called Noel Kingsbury 2.0. Noel probably has something to say about that. And innumerable articles, both practical and scholarly, in publications as diverse as House and Garden, the Financial Times, and I guess a publication that's new to me, Acta Horticulturae. Am I pronouncing that right, Noel?
I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it myself, actually.
He has given garden tours throughout the world, from Wales to central China. And what I personally love about his work is that it's both accessible and grounded in science, whether it's his own postdoctoral research or actual work in the field. So we're so happy, Noel, that with all of your crazy schedule, that you're able to spend some time with us today. Thank you.
And he has
good to be a part of the show, yes.
And you have a great blog, too, Noel, that I enjoy immensely.
Oh, thank you. I enjoy doing that. Yeah, I do, it's my own blog I do, and I do, I'm part of the Gardening Gone Wild group as well.
Yes.
it keeps me busy.
I know, and you're doing so many things. In fact, you're coming to the States very shortly, to the U.S., right, this month?
Yes, I'm coming to an event in Philadelphia, and then I'm running a couple of workshops and meeting up with a few people I've wanted to meet up up with for years. So, quite a short trip, unfortunately, because I've got to then go to a conference in Germany. But I'll be making the most of my week over the water.
So tell us, one of the events that you're doing is something called the Rabbit's Eye View of Chanticleer. What are you doing there?
Well, what they call the Rabbit's Eye View is about trying to get gardeners, garden designers and landscape people down on their hands and knees looking at what goes on at ground level, because there's so much you can do to what I like to call reading the plant. Seeing what goes on at ground level can give you a very good idea about how the plant is going to perform long term. And plants behave in so many different ways, and I think it's very important that people can learn to observe their plants and then get a lot more out of them, particularly this issue of how things will perform over the longer term. So it's all about sort of basic natural history in a way.
So you're not going to be talking about Peter Rabbit and Mr. McGregor.
No. Darn. So is this geared towards a professional or the home gardener type?
Well, to be honest, a lot of the workshops I do, I mean, I get all sorts. Mm-hmm. We get amateur gardeners and garden designers. There's quite a few people who perhaps do a little bit of garden design, but they may be very good at the kind of spatial side of things, but perhaps don't have so much plant knowledge. And the thing about plant knowledge, it takes an awful long time to learn. So if you can give people shortcuts to learning how to read the plant from this, then all to the good.
We always say that to our kind of burgeoning gardeners. They're like, how did you get your education? And honestly, Carmen and I think we both got our education just from reading nursery tags at the nursery,
yeah,
talking to your nurserymen and finding out what really works versus what's in the books.
Yeah, but the problem though with the nursery trade, certainly this side of the water, is that the nursery trade is basically about selling plants and not necessarily growing them long term. And the trouble is there's so much new stuff coming onto the market that's not properly trialed,
right,
or at least not trialed for very long, because everyone wants to get it out, understandably, and make some money out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The nurseries aren't involved in, or they're not involved in the kind of end use of the plant in most cases. So what we're finding is that a lot of the plants that are being heavily promoted are actually quite short-lived plants. And this is what came out of the last bit of research I did, was that things like echinaceas and heucheras, for example, which are very popular down the garden centres, they're flaking out in people's gardens after about 3 or 4 years.
Yes, they are.
Yes, we can speak to that.
Yeah.
And that's entirely natural. People are not doing anything wrong.
Right.
These are by nature short-lived plants in many cases.
Well, we were just at the nursery and trade show Mance last January,
yeah,
and we learned, yeah, Noel, of a pink blueberry.
What the world needs.
I mean, it was so. I mean, how do you even say that with a straight face? A pink blueberry.
Yes.
Well, like every other industry, it's an industry, and
exactly,
the faster they can get people to buy more plants, the more money they'll make. And Alice and I have found, in the years that we've been working in the business, the quality of plants, Noel, has greatly deteriorated.
We found
some exceptions, but we're finding that there's very few really great nursery people left that really know their plants, and that when they arrive to us, that we're really
excited about
and satisfied with the quality. They don't, even things that are supposed to be long term, like shrubs and trees, haven't been grown for the long-term plan. It's sort of fast, vigorous growth,
And then they're stuffed into a container and shipped on a truck and not paid. And then we get them and they're all loose and banging around and, I agree with you.
It challenges. Mm-hmm. Well, you're also going to be traveling further far afield to South America this fall to lecture. Tell us about...
I am, yes, yes. I'm going to Argentina and Uruguay. I've got a colleague there I've been acting as a kind of unofficial mentor to, a very gifted garden designer, and I've been sort of advising her on her particular situation, and I want to go out there now and see what she's doing. And while I'm out there, I'm doing various workshops and lectures, because there's a small group of, I think, very good, dedicated garden design people in Buenos Aires area and across the water in Uruguay. Mm-hmm. Very different climate, of course, both for us and for you. And no, it must be very interesting to see what's going on.
And it'll be interesting to see all those ornamental grasses in their habitat, right?
Yes, that's right, yeah. Yes, there's a very exciting flora down there. I mean, you can see some of the links with the North American flora, but somewhat different climate. And my colleague there, Amalia, you know, she's a complete pioneer. She's the first person to use the plants of that area, the Uruguayan coast, in design work.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So she's, when I first met her in 2007, she came over to Germany, actually, on a garden tour I was leading, and she was telling me about, you know, all these fantastic wildflowers they have, and yet none of them are used in gardens. You just have to use all these limited range of things from the nurseries, a lot of which weren't suitable, and the coast in Uruguay is very, very windy. It's like a Mediterranean climate, but very windy.
Right.
And so I sort of gave a bit of advice in emails. I mean, she just acts on everything, and she eventually managed to get out and get some sort of good, get a bit of a grant from the World Bank, would you believe, as part of some larger biodiversity project. So she's been able to fund a book about the local flora and get nurseries to grow some of these plants. She's been trialing them at home, and she's now just beginning to use them in gardens, and she's been using some on green roofs. And these are the local plants that were, you know, tough enough to survive quite harsh local conditions.
And what's her name?
Amalia Robredo.
Okay. Amalia Robredo.
You know, that's exciting because, you know, maybe, you know, 10 years from now or 15 years from now, maybe even sooner, Noel, we might be able to use some of those plants, you know, in similar conditions
in rooftops applications here in New York that are so windy.
Absolutely, yes. And having myself 2 years ago got involved in a very difficult coastal project, good coastal plants are, you know, really good coastal plants are fairly few and far between, and I think we need to kind of mix and match. And they tend to be a fairly international selection. I mean, coasts, they're good things and bad things about being a plant at the coast, but they tend to be fairly similar all over.
Well, mm-hmm. I can't wait to talk with, maybe we could have her on the show and talk with her.
I'll send you her details. Yeah, her English is fantastic.
Good.
She speaks wonderfully. No, she'll be really good.
So tell us, Noel, Carmen introduced you and was talking about your work that is so grounded in the science of plants. Mm. In fact, you've begun a series of citizen science projects. Tell us more about that.
Well, it started out with there was a big within the European Union. We have these they have this bizarre name of Interreg IVs. They're sort of like a way of getting people in different countries within a particular professional field to compare and contrast professional practice. And the University of Sheffield was part of one of these. That also involved Denmark and Belgium and Holland and Sweden. And I was a little part of this in that he was looking at cost effectiveness of managing public space, and I was very interested in looking at this incredible range of knowledge that experienced gardeners have, both professional and amateur, and how you can get that knowledge and put it in a form that can be just quantified, really. So I developed a survey, and I managed to get 66 gardeners to fill this quite detailed survey in. Most, I'd say probably 80% of them were amateur gardeners. Some of them, quite a few of them, were actually in their 80s or even their 90s, and they'd been gardening with some of these plants for decades. And so I was tapping into this extraordinary amount of experience, and I think we had about 40 plants in the end that we had enough data on. But it's about gathering in the experiences of a lot of these gardeners. And it's interesting what came out of that. I mean, all this stuff I was talking about, certain plants being short-lived.
Right.
There was this very common agreement that certain things didn't last very long, other things did. And I'm trying to sort of push this now, trying to get somebody else to back me up with some funding on this, because there's so much knowledge out there amongst private gardeners.
Yes.
That you would never get hold of, say, in a trial. And it makes sense to try and get some of that information into a usable form and pass it on for another generation of gardeners.
That's a wonderful idea. It's like a longitudinal study of...
Well, that's right.
You well, horticultural yeah. knowledge.
Yeah. Well, we have to take a break right now. I want to come back and talk about this because I have an American version of this story to tell you, Noel.
Really? That sounds interesting. Great.
Yeah. Hang on. We have to take a break. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. We're here with Noel Kingsbury, garden designer, writer, and world-renowned lecturer. Are you still there, Noel?
I'm still here, yes.
Okay, great. So before the break, we were talking about the power of kind of citizens and community in plant information. And there's a great book called The Market Bulletins that is about the kind of communication that existed in the South with regard to letters that would be written back and forth between gardeners and as they would share seeds and share information.
Yes.
It's actually a brilliant, brilliant article, The Market Bulletins, and Eudora Welty, the American novelist, was part of that. So there was something like that a long time ago.
Interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's change course a little bit here and talk about the soap opera you've written. I don't know how you have time for all this, Noel. It's called Dig, Plant, and Bitch. The characters sound really hilarious. I want to know what inspired you to try your hand at writing something like that, and can I star in it?
one of the rules of the game is that no one should be recognizable.
Good.
I've been in this business probably about, I suppose, getting on for 30 years, really. Mm-hmm. And you meet a lot of really colourful characters, some quite eccentric characters, very few people who are really unpleasant. And you hear just so many fantastic stories, and after a while, it all kind of goes into the script, becomes soup into your brain. And I just thought it'd be fun to write something that was explored these people, but also explored some of the kind of snobbery that goes along with the garden world.
Yeah.
Also, there's a certain amount of horticultural stuff in it as well, because as each episode unfolds, various people talk about plants and how to grow plants, or they have various disputes about plants. So there's a certain amount of garden knowledge in it, as well as a series of storylines. And
so tell us about one of the characters.
It is very British, and I think in terms of an American readership, I think you'd have to be quite Anglophile or maybe an anthropologist to really appreciate it.
Well, tell us one of the characters that really inspired you, that you really like from the series.
It centers around a rivalry, which I know is something that certainly does happen over here, where you have it's a theme on the old money, new money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've come across a couple of places where in the village, say, you've got an old established garden, maybe possibly sort of quite an aristocratic old family, and then you've got these upstarts, the nouveau riche, down the bottom of the hill, who start up a new garden. And, you know, they have the cheek to open their garden to the public when they've only been making it 10 years. And
right.
There's one particular instance I know of this where there's been a lot of real kind of... a lot of real snobbery, really. I suppose that's where that idea came from. So it's a comedy of manners in a way, and a lot of it is about social class, which, you know, we're very upfront about in Britain.
Yes.
An awful lot of our humour does relate to that. It's a way of the humour is a way of dealing with it.
Right.
Exploring these social issues.
Yeah, virtually every sort of masterpiece theater, British theatrical piece I've ever seen, like Downton Abbey, for example, which was huge here.
Yes.
There was a scene in which, you know, the ladies' roses always won in the competition, always.
Right.
Whereas the hard-working, struggling gardener who actually grows amazing, he never wins the cup, you know? So it's a very recurring theme, but it's really great to, it's so rare to find gardeners as characters or horticulturists as characters in typical media.
Right.
You know, except maybe I introduced Alice to Rosemary and Thyme, which is
a great show.
It was very funny, but there would never be a show in America about that. Never. Just wouldn't happen.
No. Well, Carmen and I always, you know, we always have this joke about the gardener did it, you know?
Yeah. Because he has the implements to do it.
So we're just waiting for an American Law and Order episode, which is this ridiculous show that Americans are addicted to about crime.
You know, there was one episode where the gardener was involved, and I always get really mad when they get things wrong or they show a plant and it's the wrong name, and I'm like, do your research, damn it.
Or the, you know, it's supposed to be an oak tree and it's got ficus leaves attached to it.
It's really ridiculous.
It's fun to actually pick those out.
Where can people listen to these to Dig Plant Bitch? Where can they get it?
It's on Amazon. It's a Kindle product, so you can watch it on your iPad and your iPhone and your Android or whatever. So it's all on my Amazon Kindle, Amazon bookstore.
Okay, great. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's change course a little bit. We have a two-part question. You've traveled the world over and you've met innumerable garden designers, growers, and researchers. Where do you think the most interesting work is happening today? And part two of the question is, in what direction do you think planting and garden design should go?
You have 30 seconds.
I've always held that the most interesting work is actually happening in Germany. Because you've got this very strong gardening tradition, but you've also got a lot of, well, by our standards, a lot of public money going into looking at planting combinations for public space.
Right.
And there's obviously a real spin-off here for private gardeners as well. And there are these people working on these fantastic planting mixtures that can be used in large gardens or public spaces that are wonderfully colourful, terrifically diverse. And it's all being done very scientifically so that it would...
Of course.
it works.
It's German, you know,
this stuff works.
Right.
And it's not just someone having a great idea and going out and marketing it. You know, things go through lots of testing.
That's so un-American, Noel.
Fantastically colourful plant combinations. I mean, people might have heard of the Olympic Park. I mean, that's a similar concept that a couple of guys at the University of Sheffield were working on. I mean, that's a somewhat different principles, but the end result is the same. It's one great swathe of fantastic perennial plants. And in terms of where planting design should be going, well, a lot of it does seem to be going in the right way. And I would just flag up this book I've been working on with Pete Aldolf over the last year, which will be coming out in February or March, I hope.
Uh-huh.
And that the focus of that is very much looking at this tendency to create planting combinations where you're intermingling and blending varieties. So you're making it look a lot more naturalistic. You're getting away from this old way of planting things in great blocks and creating these sophisticated mixes of plants that, because they're blended, they just look a lot more naturalistic. I mean, the High Line,
yes,
the High Line in Manhattan is just a very, very good example of this. And you know, anyone walking down the High Line can appreciate, you know, really what we're talking about. And that seems to be very much, in Europe at any rate, the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Of looking at, not just looking at individual plants living together, but thinking about it as a vegetation almost.
Do you know the work of Om van Sweden here in the States?
I do, yes. I haven't met him for a while, but I've met up with James van Sweden and indeed Wolfgang Erma quite a few times.
They do similar work, I think, to what you're describing and to what Pete is trying to do with the new species.
And I think what's challenging, I mean, I think it's a great idea, and there's innumerable clients who, you know, the High Line, it was one of the things that inspired them to create a garden. And, you know, on that scale, it works. And it's a challenge to reproduce that or to create something inspired by that on a smaller scale. That's a real challenge. And it really does take a different way of thinking about, you know, planting, you know, starting things from seed perhaps and not, you know, you can't just go out to the nursery and sort of plug things in and create that. I think it's done very, very differently. But it's great that the High Line has made people much more aware of that style. I haven't found a single New Yorker that doesn't like it.
No.
No one has said, and they can't necessarily articulate why they like it, Noel. It's just pleasing.
Yes. But it's got the look of being wild, and yet it's not so wild that people feel it's out of control. I mean, it's very much stylized wildness.
That's a good way of describing it. Right.
In fact, tickets to see the stretch of High Line that is yet to be started, right? You know, and it's truly wild state. I mean, those tickets sold out immediately. People wanted to see it before they wanted to see that. Whereas for decades before, Noel, it was up there. Nobody
paid any attention to it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting shift in what people, how people in New York and probably the world over think about gardens.
And how they're describing beauty, I think, is a fundamental issue.
Yes.
So, Noel, give our listeners your website and your blog address for those who want to follow you.
Well, you can find me on www.noelkingsbury.com. And that's got links through to the blogs and various other things I do. That's the best thing to do.
And what is featuring? What are you featuring on your blog this week?
My own garden is just pretty much, although it's very much the end of the season, actually its most colourful stage. We've got a lot of that is down to North American prairie perennials, asters and solidargos and things, so there's quite a lot about that and various things in the daisy family, and my own blog, that's been the latest posting, because it's such a fantastically colourful time of year right now.
It's the perfect time of the year. We love the fall is the best.
Yeah.
I've learned to detest the spring, Noel.
Yeah.
It's too much. It's too much. It's no longer fun. It's so intense and so work intensive that for me, the fall is the most beautiful time. My dahlias are beautiful.
The grasses.
Yeah. I feel like I can breathe and I can rest. Mm. And even the tones of the season, of that particular season, are much more pleasing to me. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, Noel. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. Good to speak with you. And
good luck on your trip. Safe travels.
Thank you, yes.
And please look us up when you're in New York.
Will do, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Cheers.
You've been listening to Heritage Radio Network and We Dig Plants. Thanks to Roberta's Pizza.
The person you called is no longer on the line.
That's right.
Thank you, Joe.
Got out in a hurry, huh?
Click. Thanks to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And to our sponsor today, produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Joe G. Join us on Facebook, Groundworks, Inc. We Dig Plants. We'd love your feedback. We'll be posting a link to Noel's blog and website if you haven't already gone. Thanks for listening, and see you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.